Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking in urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to this edition of City Minutes. This extended episode is focused on the Metro Mayor elections, which are taking place in 10 areas across England on the 2nd of May. For the record, the 10 places are London, Greater Manchester, West Midlands, Liverpool City Region, West Yorkshire, South Yorkshire, Tees Valley, and East Midlands, North East, and York and North Yorkshire. I'll be taking a deep dive into the areas where the elections are likely to be the most keenly fought, the West Midlands, East Midlands, Tees Valley, and the North East. And to get deeper insights into these four areas and the personalities, politics, and policies involved in the elections, I spoke to three experts. For the West Midlands, I spoke to Jane Haynes, the politics and people editor at Birmingham Mail and Post and Birmingham Live. For the East Midlands, I spoke to Oliver Pridmore, who is the agenda editor at Nottinghamshire Live and Nottingham Post. And for the Tees Valley and North East, as well as a bonus focus on York and North Yorkshire, I spoke to Rob Parsons, who is the editor of the Northern Agenda for Reach. I began with Jane and asked her to set out who the candidates in the West Midlands are and the parties they represent.
So Andy Street is the current mayor of the West Midlands. He's a Conservative, former John Lewis CEO, is bidding for his third term as mayor of the West Midlands. His chief rival is Richard Parker, relatively unknown in public circles, certainly. He's the Labour candidate, and we can talk a little bit more about him. The Green Party are represented by Siobhan Harper-Nunes. She has stood for various by-elections in the past for the Green Party. Sonny Virk has been declared as the candidate for the Lib Dems. He stood before in a by-election in Tamworth. And the final candidate to declare so far is Elaine Williams, who represents Reform UK.
So there's five. There may be more as we get nearer to the election date. But should we think about this as essentially being a contest between the incumbent, as you say, which is Andy Street, the Conservative mayor, and the would-be mayor from the Labour Party, which is Richard Parker? Is that really how this is going to kind of, you know, play out, Jane?
I genuinely think it is. I think there is certainly talk of Reform UK being a big player in this, really. How that translates in reality, I'm struggling to judge. When I speak to people, they think it will have a minor impact, and the reason being because of the Andy Street brand. I think if there was any other Conservative candidate up, there would be a concern that Reform could capture some of the disgruntled Conservative votes, perhaps more so than they might do here. But I think the next few weeks will be interesting to see how that how people are impacted by this particular candidate, and whether Reform do cut through in the West Midlands in the way that we're hearing they're doing in other parts of the country.
Yeah, that's a great point. In terms of the two main candidates, just give us a sense as to how they're going about it. Obviously, we're still 4 or 5 weeks out from the election itself, but just how would you characterise Andy Street's and Richard Parker's approach to the election at this point in time?
So Andy Street, he's a very polished operator now. He's been in the public eye for, 8 years or so. He's developed a brand, Andy Street. He's become a very well-known figure in the West Midlands. I think that's fair to say. He's built on his reputation as CEO of John Lewis, which, of course, at the time that he left it, was easily one of the if not the best loved British brand, flying high at the time and respected and loved by many people. So off the back of that brand name, you know, he's tried to, I guess, continue to be this figure of conciliation and he's very polite, very charming, and is it, you know, is respected, I guess, would be fair to say. So he's attacked the campaign. He's been doing lots of media. He's been doing lots of announcements. As the sitting mayor, he's obviously had until the last few days, he's had the opportunity to encourage the West Midlands Combined Authority to put out lots of press releases, reminding people of all the great things he's achieved and all the funding he's got in. Now we've entered the pre-election period. That will cease because that's obviously not allowed. But that doesn't stop Andy hitting the election trail. For example, the day I'm speaking to you today, he's making a big announcement on social housing. He's been making announcements on transport projects that he's got up his sleeve. And yeah, been very, very vocal. Richard Parker is, as I say, is an unknown entity, really. Most people wouldn't recognise him. His name is pretty forgettable. You know, it's not a name that sticks in your mind. So I think he's got a real challenge. So he's starting to make more public appearances. I met him the end of last week, and we spent a good couple of hours together walking on the Lickey Hills, which is near his home, and chatting about him as a person and trying to get to know a bit more about him, because, you know, voters don't know who he is and what he stands for. So yeah, so that he's starting to open up about who he is, and recognizing, I think, that it needs to be more than just the Labour brand that will get him over the line.
And is that, I mean, it seems to me at least that I'd be interested in your reflections on that. You know, on the one hand, as you say, there's a sort of the Andy Street brand, which is apolitical in some respects, in a sense that, you know, where it suits, and, you know, all, I guess all politicians do this. You know, yes, he says he is part of the Conservative Party. On the other hand, he's very keen to stress, and actually in action as well, in fairness, he's sort of disassociated himself with the Conservatives and such, and really wants to put himself as the, you know, as the mayor of the place rather than the mayor of a political party. On the flip side, as you say, Richard's not really doing lots and lots, but obviously he's got the Labour brand, and we're talking at a time where obviously, you know, Labour is doing very well in the national polling, and I'm sure in the local all in as well. So, I mean, is that how to think about it? You know, Richard's kind of hoping or expecting that the Labour, you know, tidal wave, as it were, will take him to power, and he's trying to resolve that whilst his standing, you know, is still relatively good. I mean, how do we unpack all of that?
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think there is definitely an element of, you know, Richard Parker is not going to be able to, in a month, gain the profile and the reach that Andy Street as an individual has, and in terms of his recognisability. But he can't also sit too you know, rest easy on the Labour laurels, certainly not in the West Midlands. So there are two really big challenges here for Labour. One is Gaza, that continues, you know, But I'm speaking to you from a city that is a majority minority city, where there is a huge, huge sense of outrage about the government and Labour Party's handling of the Gaza issue, its failure to call for a ceasefire for so long. So there has been a backlash, and I think he's going to have to pick his way through that to persuade some voters and some of the activists in the Labour Party locally to support him. And then, of course, we've got the implosion of Birmingham City Council, which is Labour run. So that's posing another challenge for Labour. So I think Richard Parker has got to address both of those issues, and that can only be done on a personal level, really. And then in terms of kind of the attack on Andy Street, I think they're trying really hard to point out that this sort of feint of hand that Andy Street has mastered of being conservative funded, conservative backed, with the ear of Westminster, and look, I was chatting to Michael the other day, and I was chatting to Matt, and we essentially name dropping his friends in Parliament and in the cabinet, only works so far, when at the same time he then switches off from being a conservative. None of his branding even mentions that he's a conservative. Literally does not even have, you know, funded by the Conservative Party, or a slight mention on the back page. It's not even blue, it's green. You know, he's very much, I am Andy Street. I happen to also be a conservative, but it's just a tiny bit of who I am.
Yeah.
And that is part, I think, of the mayoral approach, I guess, and I know that your polling has kind of pulled out a lot of that voters look for their mayor to represent their place, not a party. So he is playing into perhaps the right approach, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's fair or right. And electors do need to be aware that he is a conservative, that he is part of a network of people who support policies that perhaps they would oppose, but a few friends that I've spoken to who are Labour supporters through and through say, I think I might vote for Andy Street. And I think he's about the only person that I've had those discussions with where people have felt that actually he's doing a decent job, and why not?
Yeah. And you mentioned sort of two contextual issues, which, you know, will influence the nature of how people then think about it. Obviously, Gaza and the situation there, and obviously the situation with Birmingham local government funding more generally. What extent do you think, in terms of what the mayors and both what Andy Street and Richard are mainly talking about, or do you think will talk about, in terms of issues that matter to people, that they have something, they've either done something about it or they've said they're going to do something about it? What are the kinds of things do you think what are those issues that are resonating in the discussion as it currently is?
So at the moment, the big talking point has been public transport. So Richard Parker has come out and said he would bring bus services back under his control, that it would become a franchising model, much as Andy Burnham has done in Manchester with the B network. Andy Street has always said that he doesn't believe that's the right way to go, that that's not the way to get the best service for local people. There are huge problems with our bus services, very, very unreliable, despite improvements. There have certainly been improvements, but there are still major issues. And because Birmingham and other parts of the West Midlands have got restrictions on car access. So, for example, we've got a clean air zone in Birmingham. So you have to pay if you drive an older vehicle to go into the city centre. It's more and more important that we've got a brilliant public transport network, and we just don't have, you know. So Richard Parker is trying to obviously capitalise on the fact that Andy Street has had oversight of public transport to an extent for 8 years. And yet here we are with still a problematic bus service, huge issues with our train services, especially Avanti on the West Coast line, a huge focus on a tram service that is extremely costly, no matter how great its green credentials are. So that will be a battleground between the two of them. And I think that will translate to people. We all want better buses, better trains, cheaper services. So a message cutting through about what they would do about that, I think will definitely affect voters. social housing and housing is another big talking point. Like the rest of the country, the West Midlands is in a housing crisis. We have a desperate lack of affordable housing. Birmingham in particular, again, sorry to harp on about the main city here, but its housing crisis is so huge. It's difficult sometimes to quantify, but there is, you know, we've got waiting lists of 22,000 to 23,000. We've got 10,000 families living in temporary accommodation. We did a big fundraising appeal at Christmas for kids living in B&Bs. 1,000 kids living, you know, waking up every day in a B&B room that they're sharing with their siblings and their parents or whatever. So we've got really critical issues on housing. How much the mayor can influence that is obviously a moot point. They don't have control of the housing budget as such, but they can influence some building projects and affordable housing. And essentially, they, you know, the combined authorities are made up of the constituent councils, so they do have a big say. That will be another area of difference that I think Labour will try to exploit.
Yeah, and do you think those, because obviously the West Midlands area, you know, the area covered by the mayoralty and the combined authority is quite big, you know, it involves obviously all bits of the Black Country, obviously Birmingham itself, and then goes out to Solihull and into Cobham. How does the size of the place, and obviously there's quite a lot of difference, you know, there are lots of different, the nature of the places within the combined authority area are quite different. And do you get a sense that there's quite a lot of variation when you're out and about talking to people in different parts of the mayoral area?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is West Midlands is, I think it's the second most populous kind of region outside of Greater London. So, you know, it's a hugely disparate area, areas of great wealth and very rural areas, you know, across Warwickshire and parts of the Black Country as well. And obviously the major cities, you know, we've got Birmingham, Wolverhampton, Coventry, you know, huge range of political representation. You know, what people are looking for will be different things in different areas. I guess the challenge for both parties will be getting voters out, clearly for Andy Street, who will want to get out the rural voters and those who are in areas like Solihull, Sutton Coldfield, Dudley, that are more, naturally inclined to be Conservative voters. Mm. Richard Parker's challenge will be to get the city vote out, but also the Black Country vote. And he's working very hard on that. One of his team is a guy called Pete Lowe, who was previously a candidate actually for the mayoral candidacy, and very well respected, but pretty left wing. Be the first to say it. You know, he's much more left wing than Richard Parker or Keir Starmer's government is, but he's got a huge pull in the Black Country. So with him in his corner, that could make a difference.
Yeah. Well, you just touched on that, and that was the last issue I wanted to get your thoughts on, which is the sort of, what's your sense of the appetite or the, you know, the sentiment, the awareness, the enthusiasm for the mayor and the mayoral elections? I mean, how would you sort of characterize the public's engagement with it thus far? And I suppose, you know, sort of not second guessing what you might say, but how might we enthuse the public a bit more over the next four or five weeks?
I kind of want to give a deep sigh, because it is really actually very hard. It's I think what the challenge is partly is that it's hard to quantify what the mayor does, mm-hmm. and what they're responsible for in a way that resonates with people's everyday lives. So A lot of it has been quite ethereal up to now. They are starting to get more powers through the devolution deal and through other measures that see them being handed more power, means that they will have a greater input into the actual results, you know, that impact you. But it's a real challenge for them. I mean, I've spoken to people who fear a turnout of, you know, an abysmal turnout this year. It only just crept over 30% in the previous election. It's if it tops 22-23%, I think people would be pleasantly surprised, because in much of the region, the election on May the 2nd will be the only elections. It will be that and the PCC, the Police and Crime Commissioner elections, which we haven't touched on, but that's been another hugely off-putting issue for the public. You know, it's literally driven people away from interest. So this is where the mayor and the Home Office have attempted to bring the PCC role under mayoral responsibility. Labour pushed back, the Labour sitting PCC pushed back and succeeded in a court battle. So there will now be a separate PCC and mayoral election. But watching that spat kind of unfold, the overarching view of everybody is why are these people involved in a court battle costing probably millions? We haven't quite established how much yet. We just want them to get on and do stuff, not to be quibbling over whose name is on the tin kind of thing. And I think there's just that sense of despair and disconnect that keeps coming back.
Yeah,
what are these people here for, and what do they actually do for me and make a difference to me?
No, that's a great, and that is a very, very, very real world reminder, in a sense that we can talk in grand visions and in abstract terms about these things. We can talk about strategies and all the rest of it, but ultimately, you know, we want our politicians to be, you know, improving the experiences of people's everyday lives. And I think that is an enduring challenge, not just for the West Midlands mayors, but mayors more generally, right? It's how to connect themselves to the everyday lives of people. So it's a very good, a very good point on which to finish. Jane, thank you very much for your thoughts. Very much appreciated. And maybe we'll come back after the election to get your thoughts on the fallout and what then that will entail.
Great stuff. Thank you so much.
Brilliant.
Now to the East Midlands, which will be electing a Metro Mayor for the first time on the 2nd of May. There are six candidates standing to be the area's first Metro Mayor, and they are Ben Bradley for the Conservatives, Claire Ward for Labour, Helen Tamblyn-Saville for the Liberal Democrats, Frank Adlington-Stringer for the Green Party, Alan Graves for Reform, and Matt Relfe, who is standing as an independent. I began by asking Oliver for his views on how the East Midlands as a place was influencing the focus of the debates.
You split them into Notts-based and Derby-based candidates. What do we draw from that? What do you draw from that? Is it that people see it like that? Is this sort of two places stuck together? I mean, how should we take that?
There are obviously a lot of economic, social links across all areas between Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire. So it's not that we're sticking two completely alien places together, but there has been a bit of a sense from particularly the candidates from the two main parties, Conservative and Labour, there's been a bit of a sense that they've been trying to really flesh out their credentials in terms of knowing and understanding both counties. So even though both Ben Bradley and Claire Ward are based in Nottinghamshire, we've had particularly Ben talk a lot about how he was born, I believe, in Derbyshire, went to school there, then educated at Nottingham Trent University, and since worked in that county. So There's definitely been a concerted effort from a lot of the candidates, despite whichever county they are based in at the minute, to try and get across a sense that they understand both counties. They've obviously got to really speak to everyone at this election.
Yeah, and you say, you know, it's a quite a big area. You know, it's got a mix. It's kind of quite a big area. Obviously, Nottingham and Derby, the urban bits are part of it. Obviously, deep rural or quite rural areas as well. Mm. So it's a kind of mix. So I suppose that's one consideration. The other one you just said, is this, I mean, we've got six candidates. We might get more. Does it essentially boil down to a straight race between the Conservatives and Labour? Is that how you're seeing it?
I don't think so as much as you might get in other elections because of two main reasons. First being, as you say, a huge area is covered here, made up of very different electorates. You've got the solidly Labour area of the city of Nottingham, but then you've got strong Tory-held areas, such as the rural parts of both counties. So a huge mix of electorates makes it very difficult to call. But then also, as your own research has shown, that people are more interested in the individual than the party, as well as a degree of apathy with the national political scene, I think really makes this, more than any other election, one that any of the candidates has a real chance at if they campaign hard enough and ultimately if their arguments are well received by the public. I don't think it'll be as much of a tribal election when it comes to voters picking their candidate.
Yeah, and we'll get your thoughts on what some of the issues that you think are going to influence the nature of the campaign or campaigns over the next month or so. But just before that, we're still a month out, as it were, and undoubtedly things will ramp up over the next month. But how would you describe the sort of energy and approach of the mayoral campaigns in general? In a sense, is there lots happening? Are the candidates busy? Are they getting a fair amount of public and media attention at this point? Or do you think most of that is still to come?
I think perhaps in terms of the media side, there's still a bit more of that to come as we get close to the election. I think initially it started off interestingly with a lot of hustings that were mainly aimed at the business communities in Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire. So very much speaking to the business leaders first. And then the stage we're at now from all the candidates is very much hitting the pavements, really, knocking on doors. It's very busy from what I've seen, especially from Conservatives and Labour on that front every weekend. You see on the social media feeds, big teams from both parties out across both counties. So it was explaining what the mayoral role is to business leaders first. Now it's very much getting out to as much of the public as possible. And then I think the final stage will really be ramping up that media presence as we get close to the day.
Okay. That's really helpful. It's interesting that, again, that they've started with the business community and then onto the public, as it were, but also having to do two things, both explaining what the mayor is and what the mayor would do, as well as, you know, a campaigning or focusing on issues that will be on people's minds. Say a little bit about what are the issues at this point in time? Well, again, two angles. You know, from your engagement with people up and down, you know, across the area on a daily basis, what are the issues do you think that are front and centre of the mind of the public? And then I suppose the flip side is, are the mayoral candidates talking about those things, or are they talking about a bunch of other things? What's your take on that, Oliver?
So once again, the huge area covered by the authority means that but a real mix of places, and so we've got a real mix of issues. You've got Nottingham City, where the council effectively declared bankruptcy last year. primarily due to government cuts, and that means that services in the city across the board are now being slashed. That's absolutely the main talking point in Nottingham day in, day out at the moment, and it will be for the foreseeable future. You've also got the more long-standing issues facing some of the rural communities in both counties, like poor access to public transport, for example. There's a real diverse mix of issues, but obviously the nature of this combined authority means that they aren't all issues that the mayor is necessarily going to be focused on. I would say that the issue that seems to be dominating discussion among the candidates at the moment is that public transport theme. We've seen quite a lot of talk about, in particular, I'd say there's been a lot of excitement about the potential to extend Nottingham's tram network. That's been a big talking point. And the CEO of the current operator told me recently that there's been serious talk about extending that Nottingham tram network into Derby. So we'd have both of these combined county authority areas linked by public transport there. So huge mix of issues in both areas. But for now, as well as obviously explaining what this role is, which I have to say for this first election is absolutely the dominant theme, public transport, I'd say, is the issue that's dominating.
Yeah, which is interesting because you mentioned it in our polling, both people, you know, existing mayors, you know, that that up for re-election, transport is the thing that people can name. It's also on the flip side, the thing that they expect those mayors to be doing something about, whether it's improving the services or reducing fares or, you know, whatever it might be. And it's interesting that it's playing out, you know, in your area as well, which is obviously electing a mayor for the metro mayor for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's there's also, I mean, you know, you've got it on that grand scale with the talk of the tram extension, but on a much lower ambition level, you've got a lot of talk about potholes, which is an absolute blight on drivers in both counties. And, you know, it's a bit of an awkward one, perhaps, for Ben Bradley as a candidate in particular, because he's standing on a platform where he says that he would invest heavily in the roads and fix the potholes. His opposing candidates then point to the fact that he is currently the leader of Nottingham County Council, the Highways Authority, which should have been fixing these potholes in the first place. So that's turned into a bit of a hot potato, the potholes issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the lower level and the higher ambition level, there's a lot of talk about transport and public transport, definitely.
Yeah, I'm interested in your thought on how politics sort of plays into this. You know, one of the things, you know, on the one hand, you know, candidates often want to disassociate or at least downplay that they're the candidate representing party X or party Y, and it's all about the individual. On the flip side, obviously, you know, they know that there is a, you know, sometimes a cachet with the party that they represent, you know, for a variety of different reasons. What's your sense as to how the candidates are playing it at the minute? Are they very sort of deeply associated with the political party that they are standing for, or is it much more about the individual? How do you see that? How is that playing out?
So I think for obviously the independent candidates, particularly Matt Ralph, who was the first candidate to declare, has made a huge amount of the fact that he is an independent, is obviously sensing that there is quite a degree of disillusionment with party politics. So I think the independents are making quite a lot out of that, as indeed are candidates like Frank Adlington Stringer for the Green Party. Obviously, you know, he's making a lot of the fact that he's associated with the Green Party, but it's not seen as a dominant player in that historic two-party politics system we've had. So the independents and the historically smaller parties are making quite a lot of that. And then when it comes to the Labour and Conservative candidates, I think Claire Ward for Labour is very much happy to put her Labour credentials front and centre, and her supporters are as well. There's certainly no effort to try and minimise that at all. But for Ben Bradley, for the Conservatives, it's not that he's trying to minimise his Conservative credentials in any way, but I think he's trying to, his selling point more than that is that he was one of the four leaders to originally sign this devolution deal, creating this authority. So his argument that he's using from that standpoint is he's been working on this for years. He knows it inside out, and you know, he's the one who can get this right. So that's his selling point rather than his party credentials, I would say. So it's perhaps the party politics playing less of a role than other elections. That being said, the sort of personality politics is really coming into it. We did see at the start of the election, the candidates pledged that it wouldn't be a campaign where you'd see any personal attacks being made. That quickly proved not to be the case. We've had all sorts of back and forth. It's mainly been between those two, candidates from Labour and the Conservatives. It's the back and forth has been between those two, really, and the candidates who are independent and from the other parties. I probably just sat back watching that slightly bemused, and it probably helps their case.
Yeah. Well, at least, there's a degree of consistency in that, in many, I wouldn't say all, but in many elections, the candidates promise not to for it to get personal and to stay on policy and ideas. And invariably that doesn't happen. Let's finish, Ovid, just give me some thoughts. You talked about, obviously, East Midlands, it's a new place. There'll be a new mayor. What's your take on public engagement, public appetite, public understanding? Where are they now? I mean, we've got another month to go, so let's hope that all of that gets ramped up. But just in a general sense, what's the public perspective on this? Is it all sort of slightly, we don't really know what's going on? I mean, how would you describe it?
Well, we are hosting our own hustings at Nottinghamshire Live in partnership with Nottinghamshire University and Notts TV. And so we asked our readers to submit questions ahead of that hustings. And I have to say, a lot of the questions were, why do we need a mayor? that was definitely a dominant theme. Is this just another layer of politics? I think the argument that all the candidates are making, at least those who want to keep the position, obviously, that I think they all sense a bit of a disillusionment with the political system at the moment, on the national level in particular. I think their argument to counter this disillusionment is that this is going to be a new kind of politics. It's much more local, it's much more issues based than party based, and that's what they're trying to get across to people. Whether that will work in time to get a good turnout for the election remains to be seen. I think that turnout is going to be the figure to watch. There was the only thing we have to compare it to is when Nottingham City rejected the idea of having an elected mayor back in
2012, wasn't it?
2012, yes. So they rejected it by a high margin, but turnout in that referendum was only 23.9%.
Yeah.
And that was just a referendum on having the mayor. So when it comes to this election, when people haven't had that initial say, it's going to be really interesting to see what the turnout is going to be like. It's hard to measure the public engagement at the moment, but that final turnout figure is when we'll get a real sense of what that engagement will be like and how it can be improved at future elections.
No, and it's a great point to finish in a sense. There's a, you know, there's a dual responsibility, I think, on both in the run-up, but then after the election, of whoever it is that becomes the mayor or wants to be mayor, both to raise the awareness, the relevance of the mayoral position itself, as well as, you know, doing the mayoral position and making the decisions and introducing the policies or the initiatives that will, you know, that they promised to make. It's always that sort of dual aspect within, particularly in new positions. We shall see. Oliver, thanks very much for chatting to us.
Thank you very much.
And now to Rob for a tour of the North and Yorkshire. We began with the North East Metro Mayor election, where the candidates standing are Paul Donaghy for Reform UK, Jamie Driscoll standing as an independent, Andrew Gray for the Green Party, Aidan King for the Liberal Democrats, Kim McGuinness for Labour, and Guy Rayner-Thompson for the Conservatives. Rob helpfully explained the complicated background of the North East Metro Mayor.
So the history of North East devolution is far too tangled and complicated for me to tell in this short period of time. But suffice to say, there has been a lot of wrangling over the years about what configuration devolution should take. There was an attempt to get a devolution deal for all of the North East. And in this context, by the North East, we don't mean the Tees Valley, that is separate. We mean Northumberland, Tyne and Wear, so Newcastle and Sunderland, and then County Durham. That is the North East for these purposes. There was an attempt 5 or 6 years ago to get a devolution deal for those areas. It broke down, and all that was left was a much smaller, more limited devolution deal, which was for an area called the North of Tyne, which is basically Newcastle, Gateshead, North Tyneside, and Northumberland, and the other areas did not come in. But on this latest iteration, they finally, heads have been knocked together, and we now have a devolution deal for this whole big area, which covers from right up to the Scottish borders all the way down to Barnard Castle in County Durham. So it's a big old area, 2 million people. I think it's the largest sort of geographical area that a devolution deal covers. So it's quite a landmark deal, really.
And so just to round it off on that, so as the North East Mayor and Combined Authority coming to be in formally, as it were, the North of Tyne Mayor and Combined Authority will dissolve. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So at the moment, there is a North of Tyne Combined Authority led by Jamie Driscoll, who we'll come on to shortly, and that will disappear in after May the 2nd and will be replaced by the North East Mayoral Combined Authority, which will cover a much bigger area.
Okay, so the existing North of Tyne Mayor, you've mentioned Jamie Driscoll, he is going to stand to be the North East Mayor, but you need to explain that he's not standing in any political party. So let's get into the runners and riders. Just round out Jamie and then we'll do the others.
Yeah, so in terms of the runners and riders, we have Jamie Driscoll is I would say, one of the two main contenders. He is the North of Tyne Metro Mayor currently. Until last year, he was Labour. He is a socialist from that end of the party. But he was controversially not selected by Labour HQ to be put on the shortlist for the North East mayoral role by Labour. And when Labour were asked about this, they said it was because of him sharing a stage with Ken Loach and the controversy that surrounded that. So Jamie Driscoll has decided to quit Labour as a result of that. He is standing as an independent. So he has crowdfunded his own campaign quite successfully, I think. He's raised quite a lot of money. And I guess that allows him to run a bit more of a sort of independent insurgent kind of campaign, pitching himself as the plucky contender taking on the Labour machine. And the Labour machine is represented by Kim McGuinness, who is the Northumbria Police and Crime Commissioner. So she is in charge of overseeing one of the police forces in the northeast of England. She is an ex-Newcastle councillor like Jamie Driscoll. She's had loads of support from Labour top brass. Even before she announced she was standing, you'd have the likes of Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer coming to visit her and do photo calls with her. So it's been clear for a while that she is sort of the she's the anointed one for Labour. And so that's the Labour candidate. For the Conservatives, we've got Guy Renner-Thompson, who is the councillor responsible for education in Northumberland. He has his own small building company, and he cites Ben Houchen in the Tees Valley as an example of how he would go about things if he were to win. I mean, I think the race is realistically between Jamie Driscoll and Kim McGuinness. Like, most people I speak to locally think that Kim is the favourite, but like, they're not discounting Jamie. There could be some silent Jamie voters in parts of North East that we're not aware about. But obviously, it wasn't that long ago that the Conservatives took a whole load of seats in the general election in parts of the North East. So I think, you know, that it will be interesting to see how much their vote holds up. But yeah, but I think realistically it is between those two. But there is also a Liberal Democrat, a Green candidate, and a Reform UK candidate too.
Okay, brilliant. That's fantastic. So if those are the personalities and the parties involved, say a little bit about what are the policy issues, you know, what are the issues on the ground? I mean, as you say, it's an enormous area, north to south and east to west. You know, it's got big urban areas, small towns, deep rural, and everything sort of in between. What are the sort of issues that are, you know, front and center of the debate, either from the candidates or from the public in the area?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a very mixed patch, perhaps more so than any other patch, sort of mayoral combined patch in the country. You've got that big urban core tight in the Tyne and Wear area, and then you've got rural Northumberland, rural County Durham, where the issues are completely different. You know, in Northumberland, it's all about the vibrancy of small towns where holiday lets and Airbnbs are springing up. I mean, I think across the whole of the patch, and this is the case for most areas in the north, really, transport is a massive issue that comes up time and time again. There are a few different issues with transport. There's the state of the buses, which is pretty widespread across the north, but also the Tyne and Wear Metro has seen better days. There's the long-running saga of the Leamside line, which is a railway line that locals want to reopen, which could transform the whole of the railway network. And then on the roads, there is the dualling of the A1 in Northumberland, which is a big local issue that's been going on for ages. But I think, I mean, more widely, the North East has probably suffered as a region more than most from deindustrialization over the years. That's something that's acknowledged by everyone, really. Obviously, if you think of the North East, you think of particular job sectors that are now, you know, not what they used to be. And, you know, there's still some big players in terms of jobs, like, you know, Nissan in Sunderland and people like that. But I think the North East is looking for other sources of high-skilled employment. I mean, obviously in Sunderland recently, there was the announcement that there's going to be a big Hollywood of the North-style film studio, which could be a real game changer, could bring thousands of jobs and sort of give people in that part of the world a different view of what their life could turn out like. And I think it needs more projects like that, really, in the Northeast, because the region has child poverty rates which are above and beyond anywhere else in the country. They're going in the wrong direction as well, which is really quite a problem. And so and there's a whole variety of reasons for that. You know, the number of people who are economically inactive is very high, low productivity levels, patchy education system. It's a very complex problem to solve. But I mean, those are the big issues that the Northeast is going to have to tackle. To what extent that is what people end up voting on, I guess, remains to be seen, or whether they vote for perhaps more day-to-day concerns like the state of their high street or you know, crime rates, things that are a bit more visible.
Yeah, and just to round off on the northeast, I mean, You mentioned the sort of two main candidates are from different bits of the Labour Party, as it were. I mean, are what they're saying they would do and how they would do it, are they radically different, or do you see a fair amount of commonality and consensus between them? Maybe not deliberately, but just the way that they describe what they would try and do and how they would do it. I mean, what would you say to that?
I think there is a certain amount of similarity. I mean, I think there are certain problems which everyone agrees need to be tackled. And for example, both Kim McGuinness and Jamie Driscoll would both, take public bus services under public control. But I think Jamie Driscoll wants to go further and he would take the entire transport system. I think he wants to create a total transport network, in his words, where every facet of transport locally is sort of integrated in a London style, which I guess would be a bit harder to achieve in such a big area. I mean, I actually chaired a hustings event last week at the Newcastle Chronicle offices for the mayoral candidates, and there was quite a few areas of agreement. One interesting way that Kim McGuinness tried to distinguish herself from the others was pointing to the fact that she's the only woman in a field of five other men, and saying that none of her rivals had said anything about childcare costs as a big issue, and relating that to the high child poverty rates, and only she is sort of thinking about issues that affect half the population, like the how expensive childcare is, which stops many women from getting back into the workforce. So there are a few differences, but it's similarities as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point more generally, there, because we know that other than Tracy Braben in West Yorks, all the other metro mayors as of now at least are men. So it'll be interesting to see what happens post that. Okay, let's move on to Tees Valley. Obviously, we've got mayoral elections there as well. The well-known incumbent is obviously Ben Houchin, who's a Conservative. But just round out where we are on the runners and riders in Tees Valley, Rob.
Yeah, so there are three runners and riders. There is Ben Houchin, a Conservative, Baron Houchin of High Leven, to give him his full title. There is the Labour candidate, Chris McEwen, who is the deputy leader of Darlington Council, and there is a Liberal Democrat as well. Until a few days ago, when the candidates were announced, we all assumed that there would be a Green Party candidate, a lady called Sally Bunce. She announced over the weekend that she was pulling out of the race, citing the cost of standing and the amount of time that it was taking. But it's caused some consternation in the Green Party more generally, because it didn't leave them enough time to choose another candidate. So as a result, there will not be a Green Party candidate. And there is quite a lot of Green issues to talk about in the Tees Valley. I think your listeners will remember the whole issue of the die-off of shellfish off the Teesside coast. So I think it looks like the absence of the Green Party could very well play into the hands of Labour, because it will avoid splitting that sort of left-leaning vote. So the fact that there's no Green Party candidate, who knows whether that will make a difference or not.
And how should we think about the election? Obviously, we're obviously aware of the national polling situation in regards to Labour versus the Conservatives. Obviously, Houchin is a Conservative mayor, but he's in an area which has a fair amount of Labour representation, particularly at the local level. How should we think about the competition that's going to happen on May the 2nd? Is it his to lose because he's got very high recognition and regard in the area, or not? I mean, how would you phrase that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I was interested in the Centre for Cities study, which came out this week, which showed that the Tees Valley is the area where people are most likely to vote for a candidate rather than a party in the mayoral elections, more so even than London or Greater Manchester, which I thought was really interesting. But it's not surprising in a way, because I think Ben Houchin has managed to, uh, for for even for what his detractors will say about him, he has managed to put himself in a very prominent position in terms of how people view politics in that area. And I think, I'd say in the north of England, the Tees Valley Metro Mayor race is probably the one that's most likely to get the attention of the national media. Because if Ben Houchen loses, we can expect lots of think pieces about the end of levelling up, the rebuilding of Labour's red wall. Because obviously Ben Houchen, he was first elected in 2017, and it was quite a surprise because he saw off a very strongly Labour area in those days. 4 years later, he won again with a whopping majority. He got about 70% of the vote. But there are, Labour are targeting that seat. They've said it explicitly that they think they can beat Ben Houchen in the Tees Valley. And that there was some polling that came out a few weeks ago which suggested that Labour was on course to win. But there's a pretty sizable pinch of salt that we should apply to that polling, because it wasn't weighted, which I'm sure your knowledgeable listeners will know, that any polling that's not weighted to take into account the different demographics of the area that it represents does leave itself open to being a bit misrepresentative, and various pollsters have discredited this polling. But it is interesting nonetheless that there are signs that Labour could win. I think Ben Houchen, he's praised by Conservative ministers as an example of levelling up in action, but there have been some very major controversies that have happened during his tenure. I mentioned obviously the unexplained shellfish die-off, which again is extremely complicated, but it ended up being quite inconclusive as to what had caused that. But that caused a lot of controversy. And the big one in recent months is the way that the Teesworks site, which is the former Redcar Steelworks, which closed in 2015, it was bought up, that land, 4,500 acres, by Ben Houchen's Tees Valley Combined Authority. And he wants to turn it into a huge hub for green jobs. But in recent months and maybe even years, it's become very controversial because a lack of clarity and accountability over the way the whole scheme is run and who benefits from it. And it appears that two local developers are in line to make huge profits from this scheme without putting in any money themselves. There was an investigation into whether there was any corruption in this scheme, and the report came back and said there was no evidence of corruption, but a long list of governance failings and lack of scrutiny, lack of accountability. So that remains an ongoing controversy. To what extent voters will care about that? Because it is extremely complicated. Even journalists struggle to fully get their head around the Teesworks thing. So to what extent that is the talking point in the pubs and social clubs of Redcar and Darlington remains to be seen. But it is an interesting issue. I saw there's an interesting Sunday Times piece. They sent a reporter up to Tees Valley and were talking about it would really be a blow for levelling up if Ben Houchen were to lose. But the Labour candidate, Chris McEwen, is quite a different character to Ben Houchen, I would say. Not as pugnacious or sort of controversial. And perhaps that's a deliberate tactic by Labour, who want to put forward someone who's quite different. There was not particularly nice description of him in the Sunday Times, which described Chris McEwen as a sedate, bulky, former NHS manager and Labour councillor who spoke at a laborious, wary speed, which is not a particularly big compliment.
Not a ringing endorsement.
No, not really. But Chris McEwen has vowed to open up the books on Teesworks and to host regular Mayor's Question Time sessions to be directly accountable to voters, which makes you think that Labour want sort of trust and accountability to be a key issue in this election. But Ben Houchen is going to talk about all the jobs that he says he is creating or has created in Teesside. And in fact, there is sort of official government data which suggests that there has been a jobs boost since he came to power. To what extent he is can be credited for that is the source of some argument. But he thinks that he is moving things in the right direction.
Yeah, and you know, you touched on it there. I think this, as much as anywhere else, probably only second. Well, second would be the West Midlands situation. It'll be an interesting sort of insight as to the extent to which national momentum it comes into contact with local engagement, or you know, the local candidate or local personality, and which one you know wins out and such. And, you know, it's a good area for us to watch that issue. Huh?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think if the polls are as they seem to be, it would suggest that all the Conservative MPs who got in 2019, and there's five or six of them in places like Redcar and Stockton, that they're all going to lose their seats quite comfortably, and the whole area will go back to being Labour again. So that is what the national polling is saying. So in some respects, it will be quite an achievement for Ben Houchen to hang on in those circumstances. And so it will be a test of to what extent he has the sort of name recognition to outperform his party.
Yeah, brilliant. So fantastic work on the North East and Tees Valley. Rob, just round us off in terms of the Yorkshire scene, because we've got three elections going on across Yorkshire, two where we have existing mayors and one brand new mayor. So just give us an overview of the situation as you would describe it in Yorkshire.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, like you say, there are three mayoral elections in Yorkshire, two with existing mayors, West Yorkshire and South Yorkshire. I would expect those two both to be comfortably won by the Labour incumbent. So that's Tracy Brabin for West Yorkshire and Oliver Coppard for South Yorkshire. They both won relatively comfortably last time round, and it doesn't seem like the Conservatives are putting a huge amount of effort into campaigning in those areas. Where the Tories are putting in a lot of effort is in a new mayoral combined authority area, which is York and North Yorkshire, which I think is an interesting one, if only because it is the only mayoral combined authority area, particularly in the north of England, which is dominated by rural areas. So I think the population of North Yorkshire is about 800,000, and 600,000 of that is in North Yorkshire, England's largest county, made up of, you know, rural villages and market towns. So the issues there are very different to those in neighbouring West Yorkshire or neighbouring Tees Valley. And that, I think, means that the area is much more likely to vote Conservative. You know, that most of the councils in North Yorkshire are run by Conservatives. A lot of the MPs up there are Conservative. So it would be a pretty big shock if the Conservatives didn't win. But there was a by-election in Selby in North Yorkshire not that long ago, which Labour won from the Conservatives with a whopping swing towards them. So I guess you can't discount Labour, but I think that one is the Conservatives to lose. And the Conservatives have an interesting candidate, a chap called Keane Duncan, who is still in his 20s. Makes me feel very, very old for how far he's progressed in politics in the short period of time. He's an ex-journalist, and he is also the lead councillor on North Yorkshire Council for Transport. He's previously been the leader of one of the small district councils in North Yorkshire before that was disbanded. And for the last few weeks or months, he's been touring the highways and byways of North Yorkshire in a camper van called Peggy, seemingly not devoting a huge amount of time to his actual job. But he's had quite a lot of support from, you know, prominent Conservatives in the area. Obviously, Rishi Sunak is on the doorstep there. So he's been very visible, and I think he's got quite a bit of money and backing behind him. He's also got quite a slick sort of press operation. I guess being a journalist, that's not really surprising. So we get regular press releases about eye-catching things that he promises to do if he gets in. So that will be an interesting one to watch, I think.
Yeah, brilliant. Yes, it will. For a slightly different reason to the other two that we were talking about, an interesting one to watch. Indeed, Rob, thank you very much for your tour of the North and the various mayoral elections that are going to be taking place on May 2nd. Thanks, Rob.
No worries. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find much more detail on Metro Mayors in the upcoming Metro Mayor elections, including our recent polling of the public's awareness and understanding of Metro Mayors, as well as their appetite for more powers and resources to be devolved to their areas on our website, centreforcities.org. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter at Centre for Cities, or like us on LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.